This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beherenow.
Welcome to Lama Suryadas's Awakening Now podcast. This podcast is an expression of our shared connection. We depend on you, our community of listeners, for support. Please go to mindpodnetwork.com/suryadas, and you can either click on the donate button or bookmark the Amazon link. We get a small percentage of all of your purchases. Or you can go and sign up for a free trial with audible.com. Your support will allow Lama Suryadas to continue to illuminate the timeless Tibetan wisdom.
The instruction, especially if you're new here, I want to reiterate, the basic instruction of the natural meditation is the three naturals. Just sitting, just breathing, just awaring. Awareness is a verb. Presencing, awaring. I'm not talking about concentrating on the breathing here. That's a different meditation. I'm talking about awareness, naked awareness. It's hard to describe. So you put words around it, but the more naked and stripped down, the better, like Kuntazampa, the naked Buddha of the Dharmakaya, formless, infinite, not a thing, yet everything, all pervasive, spontaneously manifest every moment, the great perfection, primordial Buddhiness, Kuntazampa. So just sitting, natural body, and aware of physical sensations. These are the instructions. And just breathing. Not breath holding, not breath pumping like in yoga practices and so on. Here, natural breath, letting the breath gently flow and even recede and quiet, but not trying to quiet it down, just relaxing into it, relaxing. And naturalness is one or two of the principles of Dzogchen practice. And third, natural heart, mind, just being. Not visualizing, not mantra chanting, not radiating light, not praying for world peace, not healing. In this case, in this time, there are times for those things, but at this time, just being, balancing all our doings, our busy doings all year round and all day and night with just being for a few moments to the extent that we can. It's simple, but it's not so easy, is it? Just to be. What should I do? How to just be? Am I doing it right? And so forth. We wonder, of course. That's natural. So I'm going over it again and again, reiterating, just being as at ease. That's the order, at ease. First attention, and then at ease in this Dzogchen army. Actually, it's more like the Dzogchen Nauts. At ease. And natural, as it is the great Dzogchen slogan. As it is. And if you want to know what to do, being a human doing rather than a human being, leave it as it is. That's the next step, if you must. As it is. Second, leave it as it is. Which leads us back to really the first one, as is, but so the third step is being as is. Three steps to naturalness. It's really a circle. You come back to where you start. As is, leave it as it is what you do, and then as is, as it is. Being as is the third step, if you insist, if you want to know what the path is. That's the view, meditation, and action in a nutshell. Kind of nutty, but in a nutshell. But very precise, although it's a little, hard to penetrate that at first. If we had a good drawing, it wouldn't be hard, like in a circle, not three sequential steps. So, in this Dzogchen practice, emphasizing awareness, not concentrating. You have not heard me here calm and clear the mind, or concentrate, or count the breath as you do in some other meditations. This is very precise instructions, and if you've been coming here for years, you know that I've been saying this ad nauseum again and again, the same thing. These are pith instructions from the Dzogchen meditation tradition of the great perfection. Not just making it up. Of course, I'm talking in English, but we're translated from Tibetan, from the oral masters, from the oral lineage. Also, you can read it in books. It's hard to get it from books. But we're trying to transmit something here, not just teach and describe about it. But of course, it's there. It's in the scriptures. It's in the teachings. It's in the Vajra songs, Songs of Enlightenment. You can read it. Also, in my books, of course. Particularly in the book called Natural Great Perfection that I wrote with my late teacher, Nyosho Kempo Rinpoche, the co-founder of the Dzogchen Center in America. Natural Great Perfection. So, Dzogchen Songs and Teachings of Nyosho Ken Rinpoche. Thanks, Christopher. I think the third one would be more like being as is. Get rid of the it. Thank you. And this is a balance we can see, as always, between effort and non-effort, just like in the three steps of the stages of the meditation session. First, making effort to breathe, to hold the breath, to chant, to whatever we're doing. Pray with concepts, with words, effort, concentrating, focusing on doing that. And then letting go and opening to the wisdom of allowing. Of releasing, of letting be, of letting things come and go, letting be. Letting go means letting be. That's the secret. Not letting go and trying to drive things away. I hear too much about letting go in the Buddhist ghetto, and people are trying to drive things away. Throw it away. No. It's like if you have too many balls up in the air, do you have to throw them away? No. Just let it drop. Let them go. Let them drop. They'll drop away. You don't have to throw them away. Even if they bounce up, they stop bouncing eventually. That's the nature of karma, inertia, entropy, I don't know what. That's life. If you don't keep the gerbil wheel spinning, my little gerbils, it won't spin anymore. That's the law of karma. If you don't keep refilling the tank, the vehicle doesn't keep going, etc. So, first with some effort, and then emphasizing more the effortless effort, and then at the end again with some effort, going out singing and praying, and of course wishing and striving for a better world, to be better people and help co-create a better world, of course, and carry that into life in action, not just praying it here on your cushion. Of course, walking the talk, taking it into action and so forth. And all the paramita virtues of the bodhisattva, or just the mensch, the good, decent human being. So again, if you're new here, by the way, Ron, is there a beginners meeting this afternoon? I don't see it on the schedule. What time? Okay, so they know that, right? Good. So if you're a beginner here, you know, whatever that means to you, you decide. I don't really see beginners and advanced people. I just, you know, it's all one big blur to me. Of oneness, I mean, oneness. There's that meeting with some assistant teachers to get clarification. But I do want to say, people still ask me on day two or three, so what are we supposed to do when we're sitting and meditating? So I'm going over that again and again, the three naturals and so on. But now I'm going to open the floor to questions. Well, I can talk on forever and all week, and I will. But really, questions and a kind of laser coaching is the best way to do this. Also, I've said a lot this morning. We had guided meditation. We had Dharma talk. Now we're going to have question and answers. Anything? Come on, first one's free. I'll be nice to the first person if I can manage it. Oh, good. Everything's clear. Okay. I can go and watch football today.
I had forgotten about football until you just mentioned it.
I'm sorry. That was a slip. I hate to distract you from... Even though you're wearing a big poppy jacket, you're distracting me the whole meditation session.
I had never heard the
term. I'm supposed to be thinking of Buddha, and all I'm thinking about is big poppy.
Oh, he carries the Buddha-ness.
And the Red Sox.
Exactly. I've never heard the term awaring, and I'm trying to get my arms around it. Kind of in the concept of no self, who is awaring?
Where is the self in the awaring? That's why I use that word, rather than say you should be aware. That's why we're talking about being rather than doing. As soon as there's doing, you seem stuck with the doer and the action, the done, and the interaction. The three wheels in Buddhist psychology, subject, object, and interaction. So we're trying to strip it down. You watching the breath is a very dualistic subject-object interaction karmic activity with a purpose and a goal and therefore karmic results. Awareness alone has theoretically no such three wheels interacting. Karma, cause and effect. So that's what's called non-dual awareness or non-conceptual. There's no thinker, thoughts, and thinking. So that's why I coined the term, you know, awaring. It's just like a smart rabbi said, God is a verb. Rather than always trying to think about what God is, we try to understand the divine activity of which we're not separate from, you know, if you're a theist. So, verb. So I hope that's helpful. So that's why I'm a little bit playing or coining with the words, you know, like aware, naked awareness, presencing, not you should be more, you know, you should be present and all that. Of course, all that is in there in the background, and we've all heard that a million times, so we're trying to have a fresh take on it. Like, how can you be when you already are? What's the problem? Well, what is the problem? That's the problem. That's the issue that the great perfection teaches, that the absolute truth, that the great perfection, that non-dual teaching brings up. What is the problem? Buddha said, when I was awakened, all were awakened. So what's your complaint? Put it in the complaint box. I mean, that's why we're here. Otherwise, everything looks, from Buddha's point of view, everything is fine. But from the point of view of beings and dualism and what's going on in the world, maybe not so fine. So I hope we're communicating.
So any verb really within the context of no self is just, that's the verb. You know,
let's talk
just,
about no self since you're bringing that up again.
That's the verb that's there.
Yeah, let's talk about no self. What are you thinking about? What are you coming from? Anatta? You think about anatta in Buddhism? Anatta.
Yeah.
So let's talk about anatta. Anatta is often translated as no self, but as I mentioned yesterday, it really means no separate independent self. So there's more to say than that. No self. Also, anatta can mean no owner and no governor. God is not running the show. You're not running the show. Maybe Poppy's running the show, but probably not. You know, maybe the person in front of the room's running the show, but not really. And so forth. So that raises some interesting questions. Who's running the show? Who's on first? As Buddha asked, Or maybe it was Abbott and Costello. You know what I'm talking about? So it's not just there is no self. In Buddhist thinking, some schools of thought explain it like that there's a relative self and an absolute, anatta, like no separate independent self to be found. The relative self is the healthy, adult, individuated ego. You know, if you're hungry and I eat, you don't feel satiated. So there's a relative separation in the world duality. There's a relative self with all that comes with it. Personality and character and karma and action and consciousness and, you know, life, aging, death, whatever. It comes with it. Joy and sorrow. But the absolute transpersonal being, to use a psychological term, is not a separate independent self. So what is it? It's not impersonal. That's why they use the fancy term transpersonal being. It's beyond personal. Or in the Vedanta tradition of Hinduism, self with a capital S. It's kind of a selfless self. I mean, just a, I don't know exactly the same, but people like to say it's the same. So in Zen, you see this mind with a small M in the books and mind with a capital M. So it's not just the small self, ego, separate mind, thinking, rational mind, but the Buddha mind, which is not mind as we understand it. And it's not Buddha either. It's a cosmic, universal, inexpressible. So I hope that's helpful. And this, of course, this is a very rich area of inquiry. First of all, as human beings, everybody goes, more or less everybody, through their identity crisis and growing up and, you know, individuating and who am I separate from my parents or my, you know, peers or my whatever, right? And why am I here as you get older and wonder about those things? And what am I here in the world for? And what am I supposed to do in life and so forth? But also philosophically or spiritually, you know, the soul, the Atma, the self, death. Is there anything after death? What is the soul? What is the Atma? What is the spirit? The nature of identity is a deep issue, not just a teenage issue. In your, you know, a teenage issue to last till your 50s or 60s or 70s probably. And should, in a healthy, appropriate way, of course. So there's lots to say about that. And then, you know, I don't know if you're a Buddhist or not. You're a Red Sox, so that's like close to Buddha. You know, people ask, we all ask, it's a timeless evergreen question. Then what is reborn? What's all this with rebirth? If there's no self. But you should ask the questions. I don't want to prime the pump. You know, what is the self? And what is Buddha? There's also a good question. Well, God, I mean, these are, you know, human questions. It's not just us here, and it's not just this century or this generation. It's not just Buddhism, right? So these are, you know, it's worth thinking about. And not just thinking about, also trying to penetrate through other ways, which is what we're doing. Who has the mic? Yes, Linda, how are you, sweetie? Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. When I first started to do this practice, it seemed like once you got in the view, everything seemed to go smoothly and you could let everything come and go and all that. But as I go on, now I've sort of hit a bump where, you know, I'm kind of facing death and things like that, and seriously. And I've noticed that what's coming is fear and anxiety and worry. Things I've never done before. I can still sit in the view, but I feel it more. It's more intense, and I don't know if I'm just mentally sort of masturbating myself with worrying about things like that, or if it's a function of abiding and just letting whatever arises. The things that in other words, I didn't feel fear and anxiety in the past because I probably didn't go deep
enough. I'm
going to
stop you there.
Yeah.
I don't believe you that you didn't feel fear and anxiety in the past. So you said that twice now.
Right.
So one might question that.
Well, I mean,
and then the
step,
whole thing becomes, you know, it's worth questioning a little. Like, what are you really doing or after here? And what are you really feeling? So I don't believe exactly. you know, in general, and also knowing you personally, so specifically, that you haven't experienced fear and anxiety in the past. Maybe it wasn't about old age and death,
right,
but it was about something else.
Right.
So, and then, you know, you're feeling it more intense. We use a word like intense and all, you know, this is very much part of your karma or your energy and all. So I think all of this needs to be taken into account. But then now let's talk about death. I'm much younger than you, so I don't know much about this. So I don't really feel much fear and anxiety about death. Although I was telling, where's Timo, my attendant, something about that this very morning. But let's pretend that I wasn't. So I really think it would be interesting to hear the wisdom of some of the more elder states people here. So I'm looking around the room, and we don't have our elder states person from
Evelyn.
So we'll just kind of work down the totem pole and maybe we'll scrape the bottom of the barrel. Who's here? Marvin, what do you think about this? Fear, anxiety, death? Does this bear on the question of self or losing yourself or oblivion? You know, what happens to me? Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I can share with you my personal thoughts. Sure. No fear, no hope. I mean, my Lama, called Lama Suryadas, he's taught me over the years that why fear or have no fear. And I guess my experience here, Lama Surya, is as I practice daily and study and practice and that sort of thing and think about our retreats and I get to where it doesn't bother me. I'm okay. And, you know, whether you're 20 or whether you're much older, you never know when you're going to die. I don't see the point in really waiting until you get to be 70 or 80 or whatever the case may be to have fear. I mean, damn. I mean, you can go out and get hit. You can have anything can happen. So, I guess what I'm saying is that I live my life sort of the way you teach us to live. The Buddha taught us to live is just be there and be and let it go. I mean, let the shit fly. I mean, go away, as you say.
Go away? What do you mean? You mean let go? Let the shit go away?
Yeah, just the being. So, can I take advantage of your picking on me here for a minute and ask you another question? May I?
I'd rather you wait till we're finished with Linda.
Okay.
And all so right. Just push the pause button. I know you're an ex-professor, so it's hard to pause
okay.
yourself. But we'll get back to you. Remind me, because I won't remember. Linda, can you, you know, so Marvin was saying something about why now, all of a sudden, you know, like you're facing death, are you having a bad diagnosis or, you know, are your biochemistry changing or your, you know, whatever?
Well, it could be any of it, but, you know, like I used to be an interventional radiologist, and every once in a while, sometimes you think maybe you really made a mistake and you're just not sure, and all the blood runs out of your body and you get pins and needles all over and you feel like, oh boy, I really did it this time. Of course, most of the time it turns out all right. But that physiologic feeling that's triggered by, you know, having to actually face death, it's new to me. And I, you know. And
okay. So I'm wondering about that since we talk about facing death and contemplating impermanence, death and mortality all the time in Buddhist practice and teachings. And here at the retreats we have every year, twice, where you come to and other places. So why now? What's happening now? That's what I'm asking. What are you feeling now? What's going on?
Well, I mean, it's I'm facing it. I mean, I have something and I have to face it. But it's more like I should be able to abide in the view.
Yeah, you should. But should is a big word, as you know. You're shitting on your head. I mean, shitting on your head.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's normal human things to feel freaked out and things like that. But
you weren't freaked out when Linda Dean died?
Well,
who's
yes.
a lot younger than you, or Anne Lachey
yes.
this winter?
Yes.
Both of them, you know, much younger than you or me.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And other people?
It seems like cannonballing. It's cannonballing is what's happening.
You're back to cannonball and intense. So I think we need to talk privately about what's going on with you and your, you know, how you're taking care of yourself and stuff like that. And if you need to today, maybe you can talk to somebody, a Yeshe or Janet or somebody, you know. Okay?
Well, yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, I'm fine, but I just need to know that it's okay that these things just come up all of a sudden. Like normally, everybody has things.
It's okay. Everybody has things.
Yeah.
And I should just rest in the view is a little too much.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I should too, but I get upset too, you know.
Okay.
Like when the Red Sox lose and things like that. Yeah. But no, also when shit happens, when I get a bad diagnosis or some my friends or teach gurus die or other bad thing, you know, I mean, just look at the news every day. You could get quite upset.
Thank you.
I hope you're okay not having a bad time. Marvin. Yes. Thanks, Judy.
Thank you. And if I could add one more comment to that.
Go ahead, Marvin.
Is that, one of the earlier books that you recommended when I first started going to your retreats was the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, Sugal Rinpoche. And I don't think this contradicts too much what I was saying earlier, but I read the living part, and I let the other go.
Very clever.
But
the teaching is the same anyway.
but the Dzogchen Sunday morning group, which is meeting now in Wilmington, North Carolina, we decided to read the whole book. And so we read it again and read the death part of it. And it's really, really interesting. I mean,
yeah,
I don't buy all the Tibetan lore or cosmology that I read there. But it's really interesting, and you mentioned Linda Dean and Anne, of course, whom we've lost in the past year. I mean, I have photographs of them on my altar, and 49 days have passed, but I'm with them sort of every day, and it really helps me a lot to have no fear. I mean, it really does. But anyway, the thing that I ask, if I could ask, is that you said this morning that you're trying to transmit, not just teach. And I'm, of course, was thinking about transmit and just what does it mean and what does it mean to me and so forth. I just want to add my comment is that I feel like Lama Surya, and I know I've said this in many words before, I feel like you don't just transmit, that you transcend me over the gaps, and you sort of pick me up and put me on the other side and
throw you over to the other side.
Well, I don't have to work to get over there. I feel like you just pick me up and drop me over there, sort of. And I've said that before, but
thank
anyway,
you, Marvin. That's very flattering. But let's not forget, as it's taught, there's the automatic transmission and then there's the manual transmission traditions of practice, and these things come together.
Yeah, you're right. Well, that's my thought. It's a wonderful feeling of bliss when that happens.
Thank you. Very gratifying.
And it happens every time I go through a guided meditation following you.
So speaking of Evelyn, while I remember Janet, Ron, could you reach out, email her and make sure she's okay? Just say hi for me or something and see if you get an answer. Thank you. Questions, please. Yes, Anora. Hi.
Oh. Hi.
Hi.
I grabbed the mic.
Go ahead.
I find meditating challenging, and as I know, as I go through the week, I'll be exhausted more by the meditation than by the hours and other things that I do. And I stick with it. I think it's there's something there for me. But I read a book recently written by a scientist that spoke about experience she had where she lost the use of her left side of her brain, and she found herself in her right side of her brain in a blissful state.
I like that. I think I know what you're talking about, Jill Bolt Taylor and her stroke of insight.
Yeah, I can't hear it.
You're not hearing?
Well, now I am. I don't know. Okay. I had to adjust it.
Anyway, I often wonder, and you've been meditating a long time, so why you get so tired, you're so strained at it, you get so tired. I mean, it must be more relaxing here and restful than wherever you live in some big city or something. Actually, don't you live like on an island in the Caribbean?
Well, I think I...
So it must be stressful just being in New York. No wonder why meditating here in New York is so tiring. Why don't you just stay home in front of your hearth, like Nyosho Kempo says?
Part of me thinks that to some extent I'm almost fearful of being able to get somewhere with it. I know when I came
That's interesting.
And by that I mean when I came in here last night when I first arrived... I started to meditate and think about the words that were going by in through my head as you've envisioned them for me before about like clouds, just let them go, just let them go. And then it struck me that it's not just words, it's everything.
Yes.
Even this building. And I'm trying to see that, help myself, encourage myself to let myself go into that space because it scares the hell out of me. I realize that apparently Buddha was enlightened and still remained on this earth for a while anyway. And so I'm not going to die as a result of...
Right, that's right.
So,
but it is scary because maybe you'll really truly live and then what? That's also frightening to the ego or to the whatever, you know, the limited little self-concept.
Yeah. I see that too. I do hospice work, and I visit patients, and I can see in them and see in myself as a result, you know, that struggle with letting go, and letting go, as you say, the ego. It almost seems like there might be a drug to quiet my left side of my brain.
So. There probably is. I don't know.
No.
Well. You should try them all. and anything else that might do it. Even look, that neuroscientist Jill Bolt Taylor had a stroke of insight, you know, and it took her 13 years to come back from losing whatever half of her brain function or whatever it is. But the interesting thing is that she, if you read and you talk to her, you read what she writes and or just listen to her TED talk. You can Google it. It's fantastic. What she's talking about that other side of the brain, is just like what we're talking about, the difference between Sem and Rigpa, the mind with a small M or conceptual thinking, and the Buddha mind. So she also doesn't know what drug, you know, she only got there by accident through a stroke and took a 13 years of rehab to come back to where she is now, which is still slightly impaired, she told me personally. Because I asked her, so are you really back? She said emotionally, I still live quite impaired. But you can learn a lot from reading about that, because in scientific terms, she explains very well about the two sides of brain and the intuitive and the rational. And, you know, it's kind of like the small mind and the big mind. And then you could see, you could almost consciously shift over if you have the teaching and training. And we're trying to, we're, you know, like working on that beam, actually, seems to me. And we can access what you're talking about without having a stroke. But maybe we won't be living in it. We just access it briefly to begin with. But that's okay. It's like the poet saint of medieval India, the great Kabir, says, I glimpsed it for 15 seconds and it made me a servant or a devotee for life. So how long does it take? You know, do you have to see God for a week or a day or a timeless second or what? And then, of course, the practice and, you know, matures and stabilizes that. And you, maybe one day you do end up living there. Or you, maybe one day you realize you were already living there. So you don't have to wait any longer. And you have access to both sides in an integrated way. Small self in service of sublime self or Buddhiness. Not just that you have to slay your ego or pop your ego like it's, you know, if the ego is like a bubble in the ocean, do you really have to pop the bubble to return to the ocean? I think that's not a bad analogy. But you have to see through the bubble and realize ocean to understand that. Otherwise, and you can read 1,000 spiritual books that talk about slaying the ego and getting rid of the ego and transcending the ego. And the ego is the demon, the ego is the culprit. It's more subtle than that. That's true, and that's not the whole story. Good question. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Lama Suryadas's Awakening Now Hour. We very much appreciate your support and hope you will continue by going to mindpodnetwork.com/Suryadas and link to the donate button, or go to the amazon.com link for all of your purchases. Namaste.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.